Georgia's the new hotbed for musical talent, and the music industry knows it. Record executives are turning their eyes to the Peach State to discover the next big thing. On GPB's Peach Jam podcast, you'll hear those rising Georgia artists before anyone else. Listen and discover the sound of what's next on the Peach Jam podcast from Georgia Public Broadcasting.
Hello and welcome to the Georgia Today podcast. Here we bring you the latest reports from the GPB newsroom. On today's episode, the Chattahoochee National Recreation Area will remain open despite the federal government shutdown. The church belonging to the oldest black congregation in Valdosta suffers repeated acts of vandalism. And after Hurricane Helene and the closure of three large paper mills, what does the future of the timber industry look like for Georgia?
I think the sky's the limit. What those opportunities look like are around fuels, sustainable fuels that society's asking for.
Today is Thursday, October 2nd. I'm Orlando Montoya, and this is Georgia Today. Some national park sites in Georgia and around the country will remain open as the federal government shutdown continues. GPB's Sarah Callis reports on how the Chattahoochee National Recreation Area is managing the funding gap.
Visitors to the Chattahoochee National Recreation Area may notice reduced trash collection, restrooms cleaned less frequently, and phones not being answered during the shutdown. Brittany Jones is the executive director of the Chattahoochee National Park Conservancy, the official friends group of the Chattahoochee National Recreation Area. She says the organization is encouraging visitors to be safe and carry out any trash they bring in.
I think it's a good opportunity to step up and be a steward and feel a sense of responsibility to help protect and maintain these on behalf of our partners out there who just can't right now.
The Chattahoochee National Recreation Area spans 7,000 acres. For now, five employees will continue to work without pay during the shutdown. For GPB News, I'm Sarah Callis in Atlanta.
Georgia's forestry industry is reeling from two major setbacks since 2024. Last year, timber growers suffered an estimated $1 billion in losses from Hurricane Helene, and this year saw the closure of three large South Georgia paper mills in Savannah, Riceboro, and Cedar Springs, shedding 1,000 jobs and shutting off key buyers for Georgia timber. Here to talk about the fallout and what's next for the industry is Tim Lowrimore, president and CEO of the Georgia Forestry Association, which represents landowners, loggers, haulers, manufacturers, and others. He joins me from Forsyth. Thanks for speaking with me.
Thanks for having us.
We just marked the one-year anniversary since Hurricane Helene. Can you talk about the scale of the loss there and how the recovery is going for timber growers?
The scale of loss from Hurricane Helene was unprecedented. It was something like we've never seen before. What I will tell you is that typically after a storm, data shows, like after Hurricane Michael as well as Hurricane Hugo, generally there's generally about a 20%, 18 to 20% recovery of down timber. Our early estimates a year out are showing that we were somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 to 35% recovery of down timber, which is a very good success story. I think that speaks to the resiliency of our industry. It speaks to the resiliency of landowners. So very thankful that our community rallied around and was able to help landowners get, you know, a third of the downed and damaged timber recovered and moved. Now saying that, we still have work to do. There's still 70% of that timber that's still down and still damaged. And I know that our state, the legislature last year and Governor Kemp, they responded in a huge way, and much of that work is being done now to help landowners open up their roads and to open up their forest and remove debris, and really doing all of that with the desire of preventing catastrophic wildfire.
Those international paper workers in Savannah and Riceboro will be out of jobs right about now. That closure was set for the end of September. What resources are available for those workers?
Yeah, so I know since that announcement took place about 5 weeks ago, I know that the state of Georgia immediately that morning we received phone calls from our state leadership and really the local community there in Savannah, all offering their deep concern about the mill closures and then their extreme willingness to help those workers that were directly impacted by the announcement there at International Paper. And I'm aware that the state has moved in and offered to do job fairs. And I also am aware, I believe, that International Paper hosted job fairs there on site. From that perspective, those folks that were working in that paper, in the paper industry, are highly skilled. And I believe those folks will be will have an opportunity to take their skills and their trades to other places there in Savannah, as unfortunate as it seems.
These events, Hurricane Helene and the mill closures, they're not occurring in a vacuum. We have a decline in manufactured cardboard. What's causing that decline? And again, is there any opportunity to grow in other parts of the industry that could help Georgians?
Yeah, great question, an insightful question, Orlando. I think there is certainly a rebalancing in the cardboard, linerboard market, as it's called. And there's a couple of things driving that, right? There's efficiencies that are being gained in the process itself. And what I mean by that is that the facilities 10 years ago have gotten much more efficient, and they are utilizing less fiber. They can make the board, the liner board, the cardboard that we all receive at our house in an Amazon box or any other kind of box that we order. They're using less fiber in those products. And then additionally, we're doing a really nice job here in America with recycling. So you're seeing recycled material take the place of virgin fiber in products that are being made in facilities like such as what was being made there in Savannah. There are opportunities for new products to come. I think some are short term. I think some are long term. Short term example would be we're asking the question now a lot. What would it look like if here in the U.S. South, if we were using our wood fiber to create power for really the needs of our citizens and for the needs of the growing industry that we're seeing in our state around artificial intelligence factories, data centers? We convert our trees into wood pellets. We put them on a barge. We send them to Europe, and they convert them into power. And we're not doing that here in the U.S. And then additionally, I think for another product opportunity long term, I think the sky's the limit. What those opportunities look like are around fuels, sustainable fuels that society's asking for aviation, for marine. I think there's opportunities for those types of fuels. And then I also think there's opportunities in the medical field and in the bioplastic opportunities for us. Those are, I think, a little bit further down the road than what I believe power opportunities are.
It can be hard for people to understand the impact of Georgia's forestry industry on rural communities, especially in South Georgia, and how that radiates throughout the state. Before we go, can you give us some measure of that impact and really why everyone should be paying attention to this?
Yeah, thank you for asking that question. Georgia, for a long time, has been the number one forestry state in the nation. What that means is that we have more forest land in our state. We produce as much lumber from trees as any other state. We produce as much pulp and paper products as any other state. We export as much product to other countries from our forest as any other state. So forestry is really the backbone of rural economies across our state, not only for rural Georgia, but also for those urban and suburban areas that really depend on the benefits that come from our forest. Not only, and I'm not only mentioning the goods and products that come from there. I'm thinking about the clean air, the clean water, the opportunities for recreation, to get out into the woods and walk and enjoy. There's tons of opportunities and benefits, and I believe forests are what make Georgia great. I believe it's what made Georgia green, and we'll continue to do all that we can do here and at the Georgia Forestry Association to ensure that that's the pathway forward.
Well, Tim Loudermore is president and CEO of the Georgia Forestry Association. Thanks for speaking with me.
Thank you for having me.
Members of the oldest Black congregation in Valdosta are appealing to the community for help after repeated acts of vandalism. Six windows, five of them historic stained glass, at First Antioch Missionary Baptist Church have been destroyed by rocks thrown through them. Church historian Jacqueline Carter says nearby churches and a pizzeria also were targeted.
It's been very disheartening because it seems like every weekend for the past 3 weeks, this has been going on. I'm thinking these people, to attack a church, something has to be mentally wrong with them.
Church members are asking for help restoring the windows and improving security. The congregation was founded before the end of slavery, while the building dates to 1868. It served as an anchor in the region's Black history. Meanwhile, Daugherty County plans to install 10 more cameras to enhance safety in downtown Albany. Commissioners last month approved a $69,000 purchase of Flock Safety brand cameras. Commissioner Anthony Jones referenced the 2024 Athens killing of nursing student Lakin Riley in approving the purchase.
I have a tendency to have to tell my daughter, beware your surroundings. And when they get out on these trails, if they wake up in the morning at 6 o'clock and say, I'm going to go take a run, they can get out and take a run.
Right.
So that's why we need to have those trails. We need to have those trails patrolled, cameras, and everything that we can to protect our citizens.
The cameras will join more than 100 already being used by Albany and Daugherty County Police, apartment complexes, and others. Authorities credit the cameras with solving high-profile crimes, including a 2021 domestic homicide and, quote, every major crime that involves a vehicle. Tuberculosis, or TB, is the deadliest infectious disease in the world. Millions of people die from it every year. And yet in the U.S., most people don't think about tuberculosis. That's because major investments in prevention and treatment brought cases to an all-time low. But doctors are warning that cuts to health care could see us lose ground to TB. GPB's Sophie Gratis has more.
Tuberculosis sounds like a relic of the past. Emory University professor and epidemiologist Kenneth Castro says he hears that a lot.
Whenever I say to anyone that I work on TB, I usually get, do we still have that disease in our country?
Castro was the director of TB elimination at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in the 90s and 2000s. He says the millions of dollars spent by the U.S. on TB every year has paid off. Worldwide, the number of new TB cases reached a record low by 2020.
Now, 4 years later, we should have been going back to the downward trend that we had seen earlier, and we're not seeing that.
Instead, infection trends have gone up. In Georgia, too, there were 254 cases last year, up 3%. Emergency room visits and deaths from TB in the state have also gone up a bit. It would take a lot more people getting sick from TB for the U.S. to reach the crisis other countries face. But Castro says federal budget cuts are laying the groundwork for a TB resurgence.
We are at a very dangerous inflection point with tuberculosis.
This year, the Trump administration left in limbo the millions of dollars approved by Congress for TB prevention and treatment done by U.S. agencies overseas. Then there are proposed cuts to the CDC that does that work here. Castro says most at risk are foreign-born people, who account for most of TB cases in the U.S. Incarcerated people are also vulnerable.
Those are going to be your canaries in the coal mines. And then after that, you'll see it also.
Thank you, doctor.
Like in DeKalb County in the Atlanta metro area, it has the highest rate of TB in the state.
You all got taken care of?
We did.
Fantastic, fantastic. Yeah. Sorry it took so long.
Dr. Alawade Oladele says he's seeing more patients at the DeKalb County Tuberculosis Clinic. Most come from the refugee health clinic next door.
But we also have immigrants, and you also have undocumented individuals.
From May to July, they treated and managed about 55 active TB cases a month here. Oladele, better known as Dr. O, says contact tracing is a vital part of that work.
When we find out who you've been around, we test them. If they're infected, we treat them.
He says the new surge in immigration enforcement, making people scared to go to church, work, or school, has made that more challenging. Dr. O has seen patients fall off the grid, seemingly too scared to get health care.
And so the question becomes, how do we do more with less? And how do we get creative, especially with the increasing complexity of the dynamics that we're faced with?
Like making sure people complete their course of care.
So we're going to need him to complete this.
Even with modern medicine, treatment for active TB still takes months. And a lot of patients are sick in other ways, since TB suppresses their immune systems. Treatment is resource-intensive work. Oladele says prevention, like what Dr. Castro and the CDC did in the 90s, would be less expensive.
It's one of those scenarios where pay now or pay later.
What experts fear is the human cost if we choose the latter. For GPB News, I'm Sophie Gratis.
Georgia is the new hotbed for musical talent, and the music industry knows it. Record executives are turning their eyes to the Peach State to discover the next big thing. On GPB's Peach Jam podcast, you'll hear those rising Georgia artists before anyone else. Listen and discover the sound of what's next on the Peach Jam podcast from Georgia Public Broadcasting.
Supporters of a historic theater in Southeast Georgia will celebrate its 125th anniversary tonight. The iconic Ritz Theater in downtown Brunswick opened as the Grand Opera House in 1899. It entertained area residents through the golden eras of vaudeville and 20th century film before a brief shutdown and threat of demolition. Acquired by the city in 1981, it's undergone several renovations. Heather Heath leads the Golden Isles Arts and Humanities Association, which manages the Ritz with concerts, films, art exhibits, and live theater.
It's a fabulous place to see shows and actually a fabulous place to perform shows because I've done that on occasion here too. And it's just a great, great space. We're so, so lucky to have it.
She says the theater's history includes brushes with celebrity and, of course, a ghost story. Tonight's celebration will feature a variety of live performances and tributes. And that's it for today's edition of Georgia Today. Find more Georgia news at gpb.org/news. If you haven't yet hit subscribe on this podcast, take a moment right now and keep us current in your podcast feed. Subscribe to Georgia Today. Send us feedback to georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Orlando Montoya. We'll be back again tomorrow with another edition of Georgia Today.
Georgia is the new hotbed for musical talent, and the music industry knows it. Record executives are turning their eyes to the Peach State to discover the next big thing. On GPB's Peach Jam podcast, you'll hear those rising Georgia artists before anyone else. Listen and discover the sound of what's next on the Peach Jam podcast from Georgia Public Broadcasting.